I remember one day the first sergeant was talking about gooks. Show you how naive I was. I didn't know that gook was a racial slur. I didn't really understand that. You know, one day he was talking about gooks, and I remember a light went off in my head, and I said, wow, a gook is the same thing as a nigger. Things began to start clicking in my head, like, what am I doing over here?
Hi, this is Kenneth Doust. Today on New World Notes, we'll see again how vicious wars have been stopped by our admirable citizen soldiers in cooperation with mobilized and motivated civilians. Together, we did it in Vietnam 35 years ago, and we can do it today in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and can't you see Iran just around the corner? Here's part two of the BBC's version of David Zeiger's fine film about GI resistance to Vietnam. Sir, no sir.
My whole tour in Vietnam, you know, when you met a black soldier, you know, he had a dap, you had a special handshake. You got to the point where you could even tell what part of the country he was from, because everybody had their distinctive, the dap or handshake. And you definitely could tell if he wasn't in your company, because everybody, you know, everybody had their little nuance.
This is the greeting of the brother, my brother. I'm glad to see him. I don't have to know his name. Yeah. Just the fact that he's black is good enough. Yeah. Yeah. We know we got a common ground. We got a cause to fight.
Slap this way, this way, then fist, then high, and then down this way like this.
Oh, yeah, let's do this one again. I like it.
You come down, you grab.
There you go. That's it.
Like in the Marine Corps, the Bloods, especially on the bases, they've been going to jail for getting dap. The power, the handshake. This is
That's
where we greet each other.
Thing.
This is where we greet each other. They've been going to jail for doing it. Just for doing it.
Longmont Jail was the stockade in Longmont, Vietnam. It was pretty much just like jails in America. 99.9% black. There was a lot of violence in this prison, a lot of stuff going on. People were angry. It was a pretty dire situation. A group of inmates got together and we decided that we were going to escape from this place. What happened was that the result was a long been rebellion, where a lot of GIs accosted guards and they burnt down the jail, and it was just mayhem. A lot of people got killed. I'm a survivor, so I was going to survive no matter what.
Marine Corps deserter Terry Whitmore, then and then now.
How did you come to the decision to desert?
You know, when you're laying on your back and you can't move for day in and day out, you have a lot of time to think. So you think about what you did, you know, what you've done, things that you've gone through, the people that you've killed, people that have died. I mean, there's always something that reminds you of things that you've done in Vietnam, the things that you've seen.
Then you actually see what I saw, what was going on in the States. Dudes are running down the streets and wearing the same kind of uniform that I got. They're in Memphis. They beating up on people. Wait a minute. We're over here beating up on people over here. And at the same time, you guys are wearing the same identical uniforms that I'm going to have. And you're beating up on black people. Dogs are running everywhere. Tanks are on the streets.
In the summer of 1968, Army and National Guard troops were sent into American cities as thousands of black people rioted following the assassination of Martin Luther King. That spring, troops were used against anti-war demonstrators at the Pentagon. Then in August, soldiers at Fort Hood were told they would be sent to Chicago, where anti-war demonstrations were planned for the Democratic Party's National Convention.
Hey, we just come back from fighting the Vietnamese, now they want us to fight the Americans. The night before the troops were supposed to leave, there was a meeting of black GIs that gathered up in a parking lot in the 1st Armored Division section, and they were out there all night in the parking lot talking, you know, and they were having like a rap session and rally, why they were opposed to going to Chicago.
We were making it clear that it was a genocidal thing that was going to go on, and how can I go and commit genocide on my people, shoot my people? There were hundreds of black GIs out in this parade field. Brothers came up and really started pouring it on then about, you know, discrimination and unfair treatment, not getting the rank needed, and about what was happening with the war.
As the meeting stretched into the night, Fort Hood's commanding general showed up to talk to the GIs.
He said, I'm just a two-star general. Let me go and talk to my boss, and I have an answer for you in the morning. So, you know, we just relaxed, you know, went to sleep. All of a sudden, crack upside the head. Crack me upside the head. What the hell? You know what the hell going on? MPs all around us, man. You know, from what I hear, they put a battalion of MPs on us, you know. They came at us with bayonets. I got cut. You know, I got hit right here with a bayonet. And then every now and then, he'll open this formation up, and a group of MPs come in and grab a brother and take him back in the back and beat the shit out of him. You hear him screaming in the back, you know. And I'm saying, damn.
And they were court-martialed, brought up on various court-martial charges. But it scared the hell out of the military. Then they went around and went through the roster of all the units who were supposed to go and took off who they considered to be, quote, subversives. So a number of people, myself included, were not sent to Chicago.
In one of the most infamous events of the 1960s, Chicago police brutally attacked the demonstrators in front of the Democratic Convention. Although the Army had sent a contingent of riot-control troops to Chicago from Fort Hood, they kept them off the streets. It was no longer certain which side the GIs were on. The military had a problem on its hands, and it was about to go from bad to worse.
We were in the breakfast line, I believe. It was a long line. All of a sudden, we see this commotion kind of start at the beginning of the line and then start to come up towards us. And we could see people, like, one guy would turn to the guy behind them, and there'd be this excited conversation, and then that guy would turn to the guy behind him. And finally, the guy in front of me got the news, and he turns around, and he says to me, they're killing women and children in Vietnam. And I said, who's killing women and children? The Viet Cong? And he said, no, we are.
March 16th, 1968, the soldiers of Charlie Company, 11th Brigade, Americal Division, entered the village of My Lai. 24 hours later, over 500 villagers, men, women, children, lay dead, brutally and wantonly murdered in cold blood. Around the world, the My Lai massacre would become the touchstone event of the Vietnam War. For over a year, the American military covered up the My Lai massacre, claiming only enemy soldiers were killed. And when the truth was finally brought to light by journalists, the highest-ranking officer blamed and prosecuted was William Calley, a lieutenant.
The Winter Soldier hearings were public testimony organized by Vietnam veterans in which they discussed the atrocities they had seen committed by American soldiers in Vietnam and had themselves committed.
In a cramped Detroit hotel, a new organization, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, held an unprecedented investigation that exposed a much deeper truth.
I think the Winter Soldier investigation was to try to point out, it wasn't really in defense of Calley, but it was going after the notion that the policies of the U.S. military created things like My Lai, okay? That it was a policy. It was both a written and an unwritten policy. And the truth has to be told. You can't duck away from the truth. You can't lie and put up a smokescreen and say, oh, this is the words they used back then, an isolated instance of aberrant behavior.
You aren't just coming home saying I'm against the war. You're saying this is what we did. This is how we did it. This was a crime. This was wrong. Helped people to really cross the bridge and to see us in a way that I think the anti-war movement had not seen GIs before.
America went through a choke, okay, because they didn't want to believe that these things occurred in the name of the American people, supposedly supporting freedom and liberation and democracy throughout the world. And there was this terrible slaughter, this terrible, inane slaughter. So I think the question was, why are they going after Calley, where Calley was doing precisely what we were all told to do when we were in Vietnam, essentially, okay, which is kill them all and sort it out later.
ARVN is an acronym for Army of the Republic of Vietnam, America's Allies.
In Quang Tri City, I had a friend who was an advisor with an Arvin group, and one time he asked me would I like to accompany him into a village that I was familiar with to see how they act. So I went with him, and they didn't find any enemy, but they found a woman with bandages. So she was questioned by six Arvins, and the way they questioned her was, since she had bandages, they shot her. She was hit about 20 times. So after she was questioned, of course dead, this guy came over, who was, and knowing him, he was a former major. He was in the service for 20 years, and he got hungry again and came back over, working with USAID, AIDS International Development. And he went over there and ripped her clothes off and took a knife and cut from her vagina all the way up, well, just about up to her breast, and pulled her organs out, completely out of her cavity, and threw them out. And then he stopped and knelt over and commenced to peel every bit of skin off her body, and left her there as a sign for something or other.
And I went and listened to the 3 days of testimony, and absolutely came away from it emotionally drained and floored by it. I never grasped, even up to that point, how powerful was the genocidal plans and strategy of the U.S. towards the Vietnamese people. On every level, you know, whether it was Agent Orange and Dow Chemical reconfiguring the napalm, because the napalm wasn't sticking to the Vietnamese skin enough. I mean, that was, you know, all of this just added to the overwhelming sense of the criminality of the United States.
This was Armed Forces Day, and in many cities across the country, there were the usual parades, displays, and bands. But the recent surge of protest over the war in Indochina cast a shadow over today's activities. This was even true at some military bases, where the presence of anti-war demonstrators led to the cancellation of planned observances.
1,000 GIs marched the first year right outside the base, and they told people it was off limits, and they told people that if you went there, you were going to get arrested. The store owners downtown were putting up plywood coverings on their windows because the cops told them it was going to turn into a riot. But then people decided to change it to Armed Forces Day because, you know, we thought making fun of your enemy was as valuable as yelling at him. But the second year, 1971, there had to be 3,000-4,000 on the streets.
An actor reads the words of Colonel Robert D. Heinel, writing in the Armed Forces Journal in 1971.
By every conceivable indicator, our army that now remains in Vietnam is in a state approaching collapse, with individual units avoiding or having refused combat, murdering their officers and non-commissioned officers, drug-ridden and dispirited, were not near mutinous.
By the Pentagon's own figures, during the 10 years of the Vietnam War, 500,000 soldiers deserted. In the face of a determined enemy, an unprecedented anti-war movement, and a military near collapse, the Nixon administration announced the policy of Vietnamization, an effort to shift the burden of combat to the South Vietnamese Army while American jets bombarded North Vietnam from the skies. Nixon promised that American ground troops would no longer be involved in offensive combat.
This is Richard Boyle, Firebase Pace, about 2 kilometers from the Cambodian border, sitting in a bunker with about a dozen grunts of the 1st Cav Division.
A lot of the people are kind of wondering if anybody back in the world knows that we're out here. You know, like they say that only 2 batteries of artillery are supposed to be here, and no grunts are here. You know, like nobody, we don't even exist. Just meet.
American troops were not supposed to be in combat. That's why the American Army denied that they were there. You know, as far as the as brief as I got, there were no American troops along the border.
Does anybody know what we're fighting for?
Do you believe you're fighting for democracy here?
Actually, I tell you, the only thing you're fighting for is your own life. You're fighting to go back home.
The North Vietnamese had 2 regiments, 2 crack regiments, totally surrounding the fire banks.
It's plain suicide going out there in the middle of the night.
As soon as we start going out there, we'll be
sitting ducks.
You know, there's a thing about giving an order, and there's a thing about using your head, too, right?
Well, it's always the higher hires, man. They don't have to go out there. They just send us out here.
The Captain Cronin ordered six men to go out on a night ambush, which was basically a suicide mission. I mean, he sent six guys out against two regiments. And they said, we ain't going to do it. We ain't going to go. And the only option it was to get word out to the outside world. And they wrote a petition.
At the writing, we are under siege in Firebase Pace. We are faced daily with the decision of whether to take a court-martial or participate in offensive role. In the event of mass prosecution of our unit, our only hope would be public opinion and your voice.
Nixon was so afraid. Boy, he ordered that company pulled out. They sent in another company. They had heard about the refusal of Alpha Company. The other company also refused to fight. And after that, no company, no troops in Vietnam were willing to fight. They said, look, we're not going to fight anymore.
There are more problems to winding down the Vietnam War than just holding the enemy at bay and moving South Vietnamese troops into the line. One unforeseen problem is trying to keep up the morale of GIs who know they're going home, but not soon enough. It has produced flagrant insubordination, shooting of officers by their own men, and a deadly practice called fragging.
The purpose in my mind was either to get me or intimidate myself and all others in authority in the company and the battalion.
Sergeant Gene Tingley is saying that some of his own men tried to maim or kill him, but it's not an isolated incident. Since then, one officer has been killed, another wounded at this base, and there have been dozens of similar incidents all across South Vietnam. Because the fragmentation grenade is often the weapon used, the violent attacks on authority have come to be known as fragging, and many GIs talk openly about fragging and the military countermeasures.
I've seen more than one big group meeting where actually all they talk about is fragging, as we call them, pigs.
By pigs, you're talking about your senior enlisted men and your officers?
That's correct. That's one of our most common terms.
Forced to rely almost solely on the air war by 1972, the United States launched an unprecedented barrage on Vietnam, dropping more tonnage of bombs on that tiny country than were used by all sides during World War II. And with the assault coming mainly from aircraft carriers, sailors and airmen became the center of the GI movement. On the USS Coral Sea, 1,200 signed a petition demanding their ships stay home. And San Diego, California, home of the carriers Constellation and Kitty Hawk, spawned a movement led by a group of Navy officers and enlisted men.
One of Nixon's campaign slogans in 1968 was, "Bring us together again." And he did. In San Diego, for instance, he brought together naval officers, enlisted sailors, and the civilian peace movement, united in their revulsion against the Vietnam War, and united in their determination to stop it. The aircraft carrier Constellation, then home in San Diego, was scheduled soon to depart for Vietnam and vicinity. Someone had the idea for some great political theater. Politicians pay attention at least to elections. Let's have a vote on whether we want Connie, the Constellation, to stay home or go bomb fishing villages across the Pacific. Working together, the civilians, disgruntled sailors, and even disgruntled officers, God bless them, took a good step together towards stopping the war.
We truly believed what would stop that war was when the soldiers stopped fighting it. I'm still an active officer, as were all these other guys and sailors and enlisted people. As we sat around and brainstormed about what kind of a nonviolent action can we take that can actually touch sailors.
So we looked around and we saw the aircraft carrier. It's the biggest ship in San Diego Harbor. It's the most impressive symbol of American power. It's hard for people to realize this, but that ship is not a naval ship anymore. It's really part of the air power that we use to attack peasants. It's the weapon of a bully. It's a weapon of aggression.
The original concept came, well, let's do something where we allow the people on board that ship to cast a ballot as to whether or not they think they should go to back to Vietnam. Let's just hear their voice. And then we said, no, this election should be held in every shopping center in San Diego County. And every Safeway store ought to have a little polling booth outside, and we ought to see how many ballots we can collect, and we're going to point toward a day.
Stay.
Okay.
Sounds like you're going. Stay.
Heck, I was a carrier-qualified aviator, and that gave me a lot of credibility with people, earned or not earned. And even though I hadn't been in combat, people would give you a certain amount of credence, of course, because I knew a whole lot about how the military functioned.
I used to be a lieutenant in the Navy, USN. And I've flown. No, I'm not kidding you. In fact, I can prove it to you.
I'm retired master sergeant from the Air Force.
Yeah.
My only question is, why do you people have to look so weird, like this one here? Can't you just look normal like everybody else?
Don't I look normal?
There was this inside out, we would call it, where we were collecting more and more of the sailors to get them involved, to give them a forum.
If they want to end the war, they should stop dropping the bombs over there.
And you think it'd be a good thing to try to stop the war?
Yeah, if they quit bombing. They're pulling troops out, why not pull the bombs out?
There's nobody from the captain of that ship to the mayor of the city who did not hold a press conference about this project. Everybody was commenting on it. U.S. senators were commenting on it.
Yeah.
You know, even if the city votes for that ship to stay, we're still going. Well, I guess so. The captain of the ship says, well, I know there's a lot of people on the ship who don't want to go, but the military's full of malcontents.
Jane Fonda and FTA, Free Theater Associates, on location.
While denying that the GI movement even existed, the House Internal Security Committee of the United States Congress held a series of hearings in 1971 that produced thousands of pages of testimony illustrating how broadly and deeply that movement had spread. That same year, the FTA show toured Asia. Despite being banned from military bases worldwide, the show performed in Japan, Okinawa, and the Philippines for over 60,000 soldiers. And at every stop, GIs took the stage with them.
We can no longer remain silent about the atrocities and injustice being perpetrated by the United States military on peoples of other nations, nor the petty harassment that servicemen and women are made to endure day after day.
We demand an end to all discriminating policies against persons because of their race.
We demand an end to all discrimination against anti-war GIs because they do not agree with U.S. policies.
We demand an immediate and total withdrawal of all air and ground troops and CIA from Vietnam, as well as from Korea, Guam, Okinawa, Japan, the Philippines, Israel, Cambodia, Thailand, Germany, England, Panama, Guantanamo Bay, Laos.
I mean, it seems unthinkable now that we could have done this.
Jane Fonda today.
And that you could have a hall full of guys with their fists in the air. So happy.
Singer Rita Martinson.
That we had come to acknowledge the reality.
I read that you took a stand and refused to kill in Vietnam. You said no man was your enemy. What he's fighting for is to be free.
I used to love to watch the faces of the GIs when she sang that. It was like this shell of tension would drop away, and you would see the youth and the innocence and the vulnerability underneath.
But soldier, we love you. Yes, soldier, we love you. Standing strong, 'cause it's hard to do. What do you know you must do? 'Cause it's true. Yes, it's true.
In April of 1971, just 5 years after Howard Levy and Donald Duncan's lone acts of protest, thousands of Vietnam veterans against the war converged on Washington, D.C., and threw their medals onto the Capitol steps.
We don't want to fight anymore, but if we have to fight again, it'll be to take these steps.
You know, it's kind of a unique opportunity. It's very rare, I think, in anybody's life, that you have an opportunity to really think that you are changing history, that you're a part of history.
At first, they couldn't believe GIs were protesting the war. That blew their minds. When we had 1,000 GIs in 1970, they thought, they didn't know how to react to that, because they thought, yeah, well, a bunch of them, they go down there and they're probably all just talking, but how many of them are there?
I really learned so much. You know, just spending day after day after day, you know, just people talking about, you know, what's it all about and how are we going to deal with this stuff and how are we really going to move it forward and change the world. That's what everybody wanted to do, of course. We wanted to change the world. We were pretty sure this sucked. You know, we were pretty sure none of us deserved to be here. And so that didn't leave much room but to change the world.
And then you think about this shit, man. And then you say, God damn. Did I do that? Did I actually live in that shit? Did this government push me into this shit?
What's the pride in saying you're a veteran if you're what you're a veteran is something wrong? It's like being a veteran of the massacre at some place or another. You know that there's no pride to that. And so don't talk about it. Go away. Don't talk about it. So it's amazing to me that as many GIs that were actually in Vietnam, actually there, then spoke out against it and demonstrated against it after they came back. I just thought that was amazing. That if there had been 100, I would have been amazed. That there was thousands is just incredible. Incredible. Brave people.
What do you know you must do? 'Cause it's true. Yes, it's true. We love you.
That was Rita Martinson. Looking and sounding young, black, and beautiful, and I must say I am miffed that I never heard that gorgeous song and never heard of Martinson until well into the year 2009. Somebody kept her off the air and out of the record stores, and it sure as heck wasn't me. Nice bookend. The movie began with the Shirelles singing Soldier Boy, I'll Be True to You, a sweet, catchy bit of pop pro-military propaganda, right up there with No Love, No Nothing Till My Baby Comes Marching Home during World War II. And we end up with the girl encouraging the soldiers to rebel, to stop fighting, and resist a damnable war. She reassures them that the civilians at home will support them and do admire their bravery in resisting. The movie is Sir, No Sir by David Zeiger. You've heard the condensed version for BBC Channel 4, with occasional footnotes by yours truly. By all means, go buy the longer American version. It's available on DVD and has some great scenes the BBC omitted. For free, online, you can find a complete film script illustrated with many, many screen capture photos of the American version. I'll put links to these and more up on the show's website. That's newworldnotes.blogspot.com. And on behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, let me say, illegitimae non carborundum, de gustibus non est disputandum, lucky strike means fine tobacco, in hoc signo wink case, maresy dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, strike a blow against the empire, make love not war, keep your powder dry, blessed are the peacemakers, Foxtrot, Tango, Alpha, and finally, remember that war is not healthy for children and other living things, including our own Mother Earth. Got all that? Okay, quiz next week. Ciao!